Hello and welcome to another episode of This Week in Wealth. I'm Alex Steger and I'm joined today by Andrew Forsch and, drum roll please, he's back, fully back, Ian Wenig. Ian, how are you?
I'm so happy to be back. I know that my wife will be overjoyed to listen to my voice in the very beginning on her commute to work. So this is a big moment for us.
Yeah, for your marriage and for the podcast.
Yes, yeah. Yes, on both levels.
Both equally important things as well. So I think that's fantastic. And Andrew, good to have you from DC. Third week in a row. You're challenging Ian here.
I know. I'm becoming a real regular. I'm getting used to this whole podcast thing. It's not bad.
Fantastic. And we're here today. We're going to talk on just one story, but I think it's a really interesting story. And obviously, in my slightly biased opinion, I think it's sort of the biggest story in RIA land. This week or over the last couple. We're going to talk about Ares, the big alternative asset manager, sort of private credit, private equity manager. And we're going to specifically talk about how much that firm has lent to RIAs, really, to the wealth management industry, but specifically to sort of some of the larger, best known RIAs in the country. Last week, Ian, we spoke in your special segment about a deal that Ares had done to buy into EP Wealth, which is the large $40 billion RIA, and how that was sort of the first time it had publicly, sort of deliberately made a big investment rather in an RIA. But as we've reported on CityWire RIA, that's by no means its first or only involvement in the RIA space. And in fact, per our reporting, it has basically lent money to all the big RIAs. So Andrew, I'm going to kick off by handing over to you to sort of recap the highlights from that piece, and then we'll sort of get into some of the questions that we might have around it.
Yeah, well, it's a big story. In my opinion, it turns out that Ares is really one of the primary kind of shadow financiers of the largest cohort of RIAs. They've been making private credit facilities for large kind of acquisition minded RIAs for quite a while now, and these tendrils kind of extend through the entire industry.
Give us a laundry list quickly of some of the firms who have who it's lent
yeah.
to.
So this is not every firm that they have loaned to, this is a large cohort of them. So, we'll start at the kind of largest level. Edelman Financial Engines, Mariner Wealth Advisors, Focus Financial, Hightower, Pathstone. I mean, these are the closest things that this business has to real household names, and all of them are borrowing from Ares. This also goes down to kind of closer to the mid-market. So firms like MAI Capital Management, Prime Capital, Steward Partners, Clearstead, RWA, Beacon Point, Wealth Enhancement, Lido Advisors, the Mather Group. I mean, it's everybody. You name an RIA, they've taken some debt from Ares.
And I think we should say at this point very quickly, this isn't any sort of kind of gotcha. You know, to some degree, this is a firm that specializes, or a part of the part of that firm specializes in private credit, doing private credit. It's lending money to, you know, on the private market to sort of small mid-market firms. I mean, it's exactly what it's meant to do. And yes, when you look through the filings, which we'll come on to in a minute, some of those interest rates look high, but that's what you'd expect. You know, if they were lower, they would, you know, they'd be going to the syndicated markets or what have you. So it's sort of, there's not a gotcha, but it is very, very interesting because, Ian, I think as we've discussed, you know, every equity acquisition gets a write-up. You know, every deal when someone sells 10, 20% of their firm, it gets covered. But actually, who's funding then the acquisitions that perhaps go on to happen, or who's funding such a large part of this M&A boom that we've seen and, you know, studiously reported on, I guess just gets less coverage by its nature.
Yeah, and I think that it's just because the credit markets, especially the private credit market, there's so many interesting, complicated, structured products that it's difficult for the general public, if not journalists, to apprehend. I mean, I think a good point is, let's take Ares. It's worth noting that I'll put a little bit of an asterisk on this being Ares' first equity investment in the RIA space, because they did technically make an equity investment when they were part of the cohort of investors, including Bain Capital and State of Wisconsin, that invested in Corient back then.
Corient being CI financial sort of RIA unit, yes. aggregation vehicle.
But that was a preferred equity investment with a lot of structure that included guaranteed return clauses. Andrew, you know, you did some really good deep dive reporting on that. I mean, you can kind of speak to how that deal was structured. No, it's just tough for people to understand. I don't think they understand that basically Ares has been kind of the I don't want to say shadow banking, because that sounds nefarious, but they've been financing all this.
People have used the phrase shadow banking, haven't they, to describe private credit? Less so now that it's, you know, hot and everyone wants to like love it. But I think in the past, maybe wind back like 5 years ago, private credit was often referred to as a shadow banking, because that was it. It was lending to firms that banks maybe wouldn't lend to. And obviously that's the genius of some of this boom, isn't it? It's been around restrictions as to who banks can lend to or feel that they can lend to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I will say there's a bit of a caveat here as well to the way that we're talking about all this, where you know, it's new information and it's newsworthy to us and to the general public, but you know, management teams at large RIAs are not going to be shocked by this at all, because they are all involved in conversations with Ares over the last 4, 5, 6 years, you know. So to the firms involved, obviously, this is not shocking stuff. That Ares is you know, participating this heavily in this business. It's never really been publicized to this extent before.
Yeah, and so let's talk about a couple of things there. So first of all, is Ares unique here? Because obviously there are a lot of private credit managers out there. But so yeah, while it's not a gotcha, while it's not necessarily brand new, I don't know why we're talking down our story so much. It's fascinating and you should read it. And listener, you're obviously engaged. I would say keep listening. But they are somewhat unique here, because they do seem to be the sort of the lender of choice. And there aren't, you know, to the best of our knowledge, and look, we'll report this out if we can, but there aren't as many kind of household name alts managers doing as much of this.
Yeah, one source who will not be named described them to me as the 900-pound gorilla in this space. So I think they are really the leading provider of this kind of you know, loan product to RIAs. But of course, there are other providers. Carlyle plays in the space, and there are a handful of other you know, kind of smaller name, more boutique firms that do some lending. One interesting tidbit is that I know First Republic Bank and Silicon Valley Bank used to lend quite actively in this space. And obviously, with both of those companies, you know, not existing anymore, that creates something of a vacuum. So I don't know how true it is, but it would make sense if Ares has kind of ramped up its activity to fill that void in the last couple of years. It did look like, based on some of the loan origination dates, they have been active in this space since, you know, 2019, 2020, 2021. But if anything, it just looks like, you know, volume has increased.
And it also speaks to the sort of the life cycle of the RIA business as well. So if you look at the firms that you've mentioned there, yes, some of the sort of medium sized ones, but also you've got those sort of big hitters, but they've all grown a lot, obviously, as we know, in the last sort of 5, 6, 7 years. And Andrew, I think you spoke to this, I can't remember, in the piece or maybe just in a conversation before, but there's a kind of journey that you go on as an RIA. So maybe this is just sort of where RIAs are, that you go to Ares, but that's maybe not where you start and it's maybe not where you go to next.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you're a startup, if you're a small local business, you might get an SBA loan, you might go to a local regional bank or something. You know, and as you grow, eventually the kind of private credit world opens up to you. Now on the other side, I mean, I think that journey is exemplified by what EP Wealth itself is doing, now refinancing what was a 300 and something million dollar credit facility from Ares by going to the broadly syndicated loan market. So, you know, that of course comes with a little bit more kind of rigor around the reporting that you have to do. You've got to go, you know, apply for credit ratings from Moody's and the S&P and things. And there's a little bit of a higher bar. And some firms might not want that, so you might stay fully private.
But then the benefits of that are effectively you probably get a better rate on the loan.
Correct. Yeah, you just get it. I mean, the loans are just, I think maybe, yeah, they're just more advantageous structures and more advantageous rates for the borrowers.
One thing I think that's worth noting is, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about how the equity markets view the RIA industry. think it's worth noting. So, you know, we broke the story earlier. We helped break some key details about EP Wealth's debt capital raise, which is to replace the Ares facility. And since that's a publicly syndicated loan, well, that's subject to review by the major credit rating agencies like Moody's and S&P. And it's worth noting that S&P gave EP a B- rating, which is fairly low, all things considered. Like, that's firmly kind of in, again, I'd want to be careful with my words, so this is just kind of industry parlance. It's fairly into junk territory, but that's just a reflection of the high leverage placed on these businesses and kind of the downside risk of the cash flow crunch that can happen if we get into an extended market downturn.
Well, that's, and on the leverage point, I suppose that's something also to raise where we've highlighted the number of firms who we have found have borrowed from Ares. The obvious parallel or event to note is perhaps they've been levered up. They have the, most of those firms, or all of those firms, I believe, have some sort of private equity sponsor who has, you know, probably then has an ambitious growth plan for that firm, who has then probably been a key part of them going out to market and borrowing money to execute on that plan, which is really interesting as well.
Yeah, I mean, Hightower and Mariner, I mean, again, it's not just an EP thing. They're both at a B- rating, and it's just a reflection of the relatively high leverage. I mean, look, and I use this kind of story when I talk to sources all the time. You know, Focus Financial Partners, when they were still public, they were considered a highly levered business when they were trading at 4.5x earnings. And at the peak of kind of the M&A mania in 2021, I mean, I remember S&P had Hightower's calculated adjusted leverage at almost 12 times earnings, which is an absurdly high figure. It just shows, I think, how much faith the credit markets have put into the underlying equity markets keeping these AUM flow strong, market appreciation strong, and the cash flow strong. So I do have a bit of trepidation about what's going to happen if and when we have a real market downturn. What will be the signs of stress that emerge?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think that's, yeah, really interesting, and obviously could hit RA business, wealth management business in lots of different ways. But that obviously, if you've got leverage, then it hits harder. So Andrew, let's take a step back for a moment then and just talk a little bit about the reporting out of this piece, if that's okay. So I think it was really interesting. Obviously, it came off the back of that EP deal. And then obviously what we don't know is the extent to which some of these firms, you know, we don't know entirely how much they've borrowed. We don't know everything about their debt, but we do know from a number of Ares funds that have to disclose positions on a quarterly basis. That's where we've got a decent amount of this information from, effectively.
Yeah, it's true. You know, so these products and these facilities are opaque by nature. They're meant to be totally confidential, and for the most part, they are. Now, Ares has a few funds that are publicly traded. They've got a business development company that is publicly traded, or business development corporation, a BDC that is publicly traded. They've got some interval funds and things for retail investors that come with a little bit stricter reporting requirements. So there are some Ares funds that have to report their holdings, you know, periodically to the SEC. And so that is the little bit of visibility that we get inside of some of these lending arrangements. So, you know, those break down. I think we in the piece looked at really three funds that reported holdings. And yeah, it's a widespread. So we kind of took a look at what the RIA holdings were in some of those. There were a few equity positions. And it was just a matter of combing through 10Qs and finding names that we were familiar with, you know?
Yeah, really interesting. And there might be more. There might be more funds from Ares that disclose more names. There might be more, as you mentioned, I think you mentioned Carlyle earlier, there might be other lenders who are, you know, equally sort of involved in this space. But I think our sense and what sources have told us is that, you know, to your point, Andrew, Ares is the wait, I'm going to get this wrong. 900 pound, 90 pound. How heavy should it be?
900, a 90 pound gorilla would be quite small. I feel like even maybe 900.
It's the 800 pound gorilla. Okay, we might edit around this because it sounds stupid. We probably won't. I think we'll keep it in. Anyway, they're the big gorilla. But yeah, and I just think that goes unnoticed, doesn't it? Is, you know, and I think it's a question that probably all of us should be asking more is, you know, whenever we see these deals and whenever we talk to, you know, founders, executives, and they say, we've got massive, ambitious plans to grow by X, Y, Z over this time frame, it's like, well, who's how are you funding it? And, you know, often historically the case has been, well, this one lender. And as we say, and I think we should emphasize, not a good or bad thing. It's not a gotcha. It's just a statement of facts and something that sort of, I think Andrew used this phrase in your article very nice, of hiding in plain sight. You know, it's there if you wanted to look. We've looked and we've written an article about it. What else should we know, Ian? I think we touched on this a little bit last week around whether there's a conflict of interest for them now that they're both sort of supporting other firms going out and doing deals, but now they own a stake in one particular firm themselves. I don't know how big a deal that is.
Yeah, I can't imagine that a minority position like this is really going to affect, because it's essentially, you know, Ares is this massive alternative asset manager. You have kind of two different sleeves of the business, essentially. You know, they're kind of siloed away from each other. So I don't view this as an inherent major conflict. I think, Andrew, when you were reporting the feature on this, you asked relatively similar questions to some of the experts that you spoke to, and you got relatively similar feedback.
Yeah, I mean, look, a firm like Ares is going to have all the appropriate firewalls in place. They just have there's nothing to gain really for them by conflating those two things, and they have everything to lose. But I do think that, you know, Ares, it was kind of held out that Ares, just the fact that they're looking at every firm and they're working with every firm gives them just a level of knowledge about the way that the business works and the way that the industry works that they can really make decisions confidently on both sides of the ball, both equity and credit. They have their own wealth management unit that works with RIAs, obviously on, you know, other Ares products. And giving those products, giving those external advisors access to those products. So they work with RAs in all sorts of different capacities, and they, are going to feel like they can operate confidently in this sandbox, certainly.
Very quickly, because it's a little bit of a tangent, but they do also have a pretty sizable wealth management wealth management company of their own, if that's right.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know a ton about it, but they do play in the space as well. And that'll just contribute to that feeling of confidence and just, you know, knowing the players, knowing how everything works, being able to feel confident that you're offering a product that works for the borrower at terms that obviously work for Ares. So
yeah, it sounds like, well, two things. One, I assume their wealth management business looks after the wealth of people who work there, so maybe it's not hugely comparable to a sort of, you know, the kind of RIAs we write about. It's like to have a pretty different business model in terms of pipeline and sort of the way people invest. Second thing, I mean, it sounds like we should try and get someone from Ares on the pod, frankly.
That'd be great.
If you're listening, hit us up. But yeah, brilliant. Well, look, Ian, Andrew, is there anything else we need to add to this? Have we sort of covered the ground? Have we missed any sort of key points from the piece or anything else that we're working on related to this story?
I feel like we've covered a lot of ground. I mean, look, this is, again, it's all part of the overarching theme that has built this podcast and built this website up, which is the maturation, the professionalization of the RE industry. I mean, these are the types of actions that maturing industries have happened to them.
Absolutely. Andrew, anything else you want to add?
Well, I'll chime in and say this, you know, what Ares has done is not unique necessarily to the U.S. wealth management business. As per CityWire's previous reporting, a little less than a year ago, we had a similar piece go about how Ares was financing, many, I think it was 12 of the United Kingdom's largest wealth management aggregators. So they've had some success in the space internationally. They're playing here in the U.S. Shouldn't shock anybody, but it certainly is fascinating to unpack.
Yeah, exactly. And for them, a tiny slice of those portfolios, you know, it's a subset of the financial services sector exposure.
Look, they're diversified, and even within the RIA business, they're diversified. You look at the list that we just read off earlier in this podcast, and it's not just one model. I mean, they have high towers, they have, you know, integrators, they have like a Steward Partners, which is more of a 1099 shop. I mean, they're well diversified, right?
Yeah, and I mean, where I was going to go with that was, you know, obviously it's a tiny thing for them, but it's just a big deal for us because, you know, what we do is write about RIAs every day. So finding one firm that's sort of lending to most of them, that is inherently interesting to us and what we do. Well, look, excellent reporting, Andrew. Excellent talking about it. So thank you both very much indeed for that. I would talk baseball, but I feel like we're recording a little bit earlier in the week, listeners. So by the time this comes out, who knows where things are. But suffice to say, Ian, you're okay now. You've recovered and you're happy.
We've gone through the period of mourning, yes.
Yes, okay.
And that's that, Shiva.
And what? Where are we looking to now? We're looking to. We're just cutting straight to the college basketball season. Is that?
You've already just given up on the Giants for me.
It was implicit. Yeah, I don't know. Should I have?
Yeah, you probably should have.
Okay. All right. Well, we won't completely, but excellent. Well, on that slightly downbeat note, we'll leave it there. We're heading to Austin this week, Ian, for our sort of flagship RAA event. So that'll be exciting, and I think next week's podcast will focus very much on that, among whatever else the big stories are. So thank you both very much indeed for joining us. Thank you, listener, and we'll be back again very soon for another episode of This Week in Wealth.